This
is URN.
Hello and welcome to Nerd of Mouth, the weekly show where we talk about all things nerdy. We're back from our break and we've got some new topics to talk about, so we're very excited. So starting off, my name's Philippa, I use she, her pronouns. This week my nerdy thing is I bought in the New Year's sale the D&D guidebook to Eberron, which is the Wayfarer's Guide to Eberron, which is like a campaign setting which has got a lot of sort of steampunk film noir type vibe, so I'm really excited to kind of plan some campaigns around that, so maybe I'll talk about that more in a future episode. I'm also joined by...
Hello, my name is Jamie, my pronouns are he, him, and the nerdy thing I've been doing this week is getting back into Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, Explorers of Time. It's Pokemon and it's time travel, what's not to like? It's like as much nerdy things as you can smush into a thing. If Doctor Who did a Pokemon episode, I'd never leave the house. I'm also joined by...
Hello, I'm Ipsam. My pronouns are he and him. Just on that note, by the way, Chris Chibnall, if you're listening, Pokemon or Doctor Who, winning formula right there. My nerdy thing of the week is I just finished reading the latest X-Men arc, House of X, Powers of X, which has been lovingly abbreviated to Hoxpox, which I think is just hilarious. It's a fantastic new take on the X-Men. It's not a reboot by any means, so people worried about that, don't worry. But what it does do is kind of update a few of the relationships. The most exciting thing about it, I think, is the X-Men have always been a really excellent analogy for the civil rights movement. But obviously the civil rights movement has evolved and the way to approach civil rights has evolved. And I think it's really great to see the comics take that on board because Xavier and Magneto's relationship kind of fundamentally changes in a good way and looks at that from 2020 onwards. So new decade, new Xavier, who dis?
exciting. I might read that. That sounds good. I suppose we could do a little transition here. Talking of X-Men and comics, this is going to be a really forced transition, but the Joker, what? Oscar series. So this week, Ivita has suggested that we talk about the Oscars and all that jazz. So I'm going to give it over to you so you can explain like what you kind of think this is, why this is an interesting topic for us to talk about.
So there have been a few massive controversies this year, as usual, I should say, around Oscars and more broadly the awards season. And as you mentioned, Joker, how on earth, 11 nominations. But one of the big concerns that's been raised this year is how the Oscars have really failed to look at questions of diversity. And what sets it apart from most recent years, where this has been an ongoing conversation, unfortunately, check out the hashtag OscarsSoWhite for a really detailed archive on Twitter on previous years and why this has been a problem. But what really sets this year apart is, in most years, the Oscars nominations and the lack of diversity in them were taken more as a symptom rather than the problem. So there's a wider issue of diversity within the film industry, and the Oscars are just nominating out of a really narrow, mostly white, mostly male pick. But 2019 wasn't really a year like that. There were several women who were in roles that weren't just actress and supporting actress. A lot of them did amazing films as directors and producers. And there was a whole range of roles for people of color. And yet not a single woman was nominated in the Best Director category at all. And we only have one nomination of color in the four acting categories combined. So it's 20 nominations in the four acting categories, one person of color. And indeed a color for a role that kind of fits into tropes, which we'll be going into in a bit. But what we're hoping to discuss today is kind of the question of why that might be the case and why that's a problem. But I think before we dive into this, I'm a huge Oscars buff and I love the award season. I'm just curious whether either of you two, one, whether either of you watch, but also two, whether either of you two really care or what award season might mean. To viewers as well, because I think that's an important reason to discuss why this even matters.
So I'm probably the complete opposite end of the Oscar spectrum in that I do not watch the Oscars, so great content this week for me, surely. But I don't watch the Oscars. I don't really pay any attention in terms of altering my film watching based on if someone's been nominated for an Oscar or won an Oscar. And I don't really see the point a lot of the time because I feel like it's a bit of a popularity contest. And I feel like a lot of awards are that, and therefore I don't really put that much stock in them. But obviously that's my opinion. But that's just how I kind of, when I view a film, I don't really watch films that often. I tend to go to more towards TV series anyway. So it doesn't really affect my viewing habits that much. Jamie, what's your experience with Oscars?
I go back and forth on the Oscars. It seems every other year I catch a lot of them. And then on the flip side of those years, I catch none of them, really. I even managed to avoid the popular ones this year. I didn't watch Joker or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for similar reasons. I have one thing about the Oscars, and it's that I'm annoyed that the Shaun the Sheep Farmageddon movie didn't get nominated for Best Animated Picture. I can see why in many ways, but also I think Aardman are... I suspect it's... a certain amount of... they put it into categories. So they've got one stop-motion thing, which is Missing Link, which I can't imagine is as good. They probably don't put films into categories. There's a bit of me that thinks that they've got a little shortlist and they have to put things in a sort of almost tokenistic gesture. And yet somehow they've failed to do that on the most high-profile bit. So it's... I don't know what this says. Am I right in saying that the Academy is based on everyone who has ever won an Oscar voting in those respective categories?
So anyone who wins an Oscar is automatically eligible to be part of the Academy, but the Academy isn't just a base of previous winners. It's more like an industry-wide thing. Best Picture is nominated by the entire Academy branch, so every single person gets to vote on it. But with most of the categories, it's specific things. So actors vote on the acting categories, directors on the directing categories, etc., etc. Films do have to put themselves up for specific category nominations, and there's a lot of campaigning involved. For fans who may be upset that Robert Downey Jr. didn't get a nomination for Avengers Endgame, but Joaquin Phoenix did for The Joker, that's because Robert Downey Jr. specifically said he doesn't care and doesn't want to bother campaigning. So there is, you know, some of that also comes into play. The structure is quite insular, although in recent years the Academy has taken on board calls to diversify. In the past 2 years alone, the number of women in the Academy has gone up, the number of people of colour has gone up, the intake of younger voters has gone up as well, and the current Academy president is a black woman. So they've noticed that they have a structural issue. They're taking some steps to correct it, but clearly we haven't had an overnight fix, which isn't too, you know, unexpected. But I think when you look at the context of the films that have been snubbed this year, it becomes quite apparent that this really is a problem. On that note, I think it's important to look at why there's been quite so much of controversy. And I'm going to actually start off by looking at the director's category. So with the director's category, it's five directors who get nominated. So obviously in previous years, when it used to be only five films in the Best Picture category, it was almost a given that whatever film got nominated for Best Picture gets nominated for Best Director. It was kind of a 1-2 punch. That's no longer the case because the Best Picture category can have up to 10 nominations now, but the Best Director category still has only five. So you do have female-produced and female-directed Best Picture nominees, such as Little Women, that haven't been nominated for Best Director. Four names in particular really stick out this year, of course. Greta Gerwig for Little Women, Lily Wang for The Farewell, a film that got completely shut out, not a single nomination despite a lot of really good press and several Golden Globes wins. Laura Nyerske for Hustlers, again, completely shut out. And slightly left-field choice, Celine Sciamma for Portrait of a Lady on Fire. You don't tend to get Best Director nominations for foreign language films, but they've had one this year with Bong Joon-ho for Parasite, so they have pointed it out. The reason I mention this is, again, it's not a case of there's been one big female-directed film, as was the case with Kathryn Bigelow when she was nominated and actually won for The Hurt Locker. But it's a case of we've had four films straight off the bat that you can think of that missed out on a director nomination. For context, the nominees are Martin Scorsese for The Irishman, Todd Phillips for Joker, Sam Mendes for 1917, Quentin Tarantino for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Bong Joon-ho in Parasite. And what a lot of people have been pointing out is, particularly with Todd Phillips' nomination for The Joker, or rather Joker, there is no the, my apologies for any fans who are listening. Director is a very specific technical category. Unlike picture, which you can argue for a nomination based on a strong performance, even if the direction might have been weak, or vice versa, director is very much about the role of the man, in this case, the man in the chair. And a lot of people have pointed out that the success of Joker relies mostly on Joaquin Phoenix's performance, and as has been pointed out by the creators of the film themselves, it was more down to Joaquin Phoenix rather than Todd Phillips as a director. By contrast, at least Little Women, and certainly also The Farewell to an extent, Hustlers to an extent, are very much quintessential director films, the way the Oscar considers a film to be a director's film. It's not about individual performances, it's about how the director creates a narrative using them. So it's really a case of a massive oversight and a massive snub with regards to the context of the category as well. I haven't seen all of the films I've mentioned. That's also because a lot of them haven't been released in the UK yet. But based on trailers, based on interviews, and certainly based on the way the actors themselves have spoken about the role of their directors, Greta Gerwig really in particular feels like a massive snub. She was nominated for Lady Bird a few years ago, and maybe the Academy feels we've given her one nomination, that should be fine. But kind of knowing this context, what do we think about this? Because obviously there's a lot to be said about it being snub, and on the opposite end, it, you know, should be about artistic merit and not about gender, but what do we feel about this?
So this kind of makes me think of a book I've been reading for a while, because I've been reading it very slowly, which I think I mentioned a few shows ago, called Invisible Women, which is about like the data, the gender data gap. And one of the like the chapters in that talks about how we kind of have this view that like innate merit or like innate talent is sometimes needed for certain roles. And sometimes we assume that innate talent comes from like being a man, even though that's not necessarily the case. And I think for me, that stands out as like, oh, director, that's very like, oh, individual, like in my mind, like the image I have in my mind is like a guy riding around set with a little like megaphone telling people what to do, versus best pictures, like, oh, collaborative and like everyone working together. Like that seems like it could be a lot of different people and doesn't have that sort of tied into it. So I wonder if that's kind of like a sort of accidental effect of that sort of stereotype kind of impacting who people end up sort of thinking, like if they had to choose between two people, they might be like, oh, well, Quentin Tarantino is, you know, innately talented as a director and he has this amazing spark and, you know, he's so different, when actually is he that much different, like, in style? And, like, stylistically as well, I think sometimes that can kind of affect how you view a thing. If there's an obvious stylistic difference, like with Tarantino, it's his presence as director is more obvious.
I think you do make a good point. There is an awful lot of style, and I think, you know, I can never particularly tell when something is a directorial choice or when it's an actor's choice or even when it's a screenwriting choice. So when there are things that, especially with more prolific people, where you can point at a thing and go, oh yes, that is a thing I recognise from this thing, you can jot that down as, oh yes, that's a director thing. I've noticed more directing in this. And I saw a tweet a while back that got a lot of traction but has been debunked a bit, where someone's saying that the reason why more male directors get noticed than female directors, and I think this very much built on your point, is that male directors, the idea that this is wrong, but it's that male directors sort of force an awful lot of stuff in there. There's an awful lot of, this is me, this is my directorial stance, this is more sort of formatting, whereas supposedly, according to this person, women are more sort of interior, and so they don't put the style on. And I think that's something we need to get out of the habit of thinking.
No, I think I know what you mean. Like, it's kind of like we've still got these innate, like, we've still got these stereotypes in our brain, even if we don't realise they're there. So we've got the bias there, and it's affecting us, even if someone might be thinking in their brain, like, I'm not biased, I'm just going to choose the one I think is best. But what we think is best is obviously going to be influenced by what we've seen before, what we've been taught is a good film. I mean, that's one of the reasons I don't really like stuff to do with nomination stuff, is that I'm definitely, like, a pop culture consumer. I like bad movies. I like stuff that is not good in the eyes of, like, you know, the canon. It doesn't fit in there. And so I often feel like a lot of films I actually really enjoyed don't get added because they don't meet a certain sort of style or a certain storytelling element. So I think that can also tie into it, is like, are they telling the sort of story we're expecting this director to tell, and do they fit the stereotype?
And I think there's also a sort of this idea that often stuff directed by women whose audience is primarily women sort of pushed to one side and it becomes, in a way, its own genre, in a way. Yeah. Whereas sort of male films are considered universal. I mean, you know, I see a lot of people saying, oh yeah, Shakespeare's stuff is universal. Why do we have to do sort of stuff about specific political issues? And it's, no, Shakespeare's political as well. It's just some of the context we've lost. And the fact that people do keep setting Shakespeare's stuff in lots of different things proves that it is intensely political as well.
I think building off that, it's also worth pointing out, as we mentioned earlier, that there's also been a controversy around race. And I think that question of default, but not just default, but what an acceptable universal role is, really comes into play. For a bit of context, these are some of the amazing nominees, or I should say deserving nominees, who were snubbed this year. Lupita Nyong'o was snubbed for Us, despite the fact that she plays effectively two characters in two very different ways. Daniel Kaluuya and Jodie Turner-Smith were both snubbed for Queen and Slim. Song Kang-ho was snubbed for Parasite. The film got a lot of recognition, but its acting and its actors didn't. Jennifer Lopez was a really early frontrunner for a supporting actress in Hustlers, but she got completely sidetracked. Awkwafina, who won the Golden Globe for Best Actress in a comedy musical, and Zhao Shuzhen got snubbed for The Farewell, and Eddie Murphy got snubbed for Dolomite Is My Name. The one nominee of colour in the acting categories is Cynthia Erivo for Harriet, the Harriet Tubman film. In one of our earlier episodes, and you will find this in our archive, we discussed some of the controversial aspects of the Harriet Tubman film, but we're going to set that aside. That's not really the problem. The problem that has been pointed out by several journalists and academics and writers and bloggers is that the Academy seems to have a habit of nominating people of colour for a specific type of role. So the characters we've mentioned who didn't get nominated include very generic, I say generic, a very everyday, can be played by any person of any race kind of characters. Apart, of course, from the specific question of Queen and Slim, which was, and Dolomite Is My Name, the latter because it was a biographical film, and Queen and Slim because that specifically dealt with police brutality on the black community. But with Lupita Nyong'o and Us, Song Kang-ho and Parasite, Jennifer Lopez and Hustlers, Awkwafina and Zhao Shuzhen to an extent as well in The Farewell, although that has a specific Chinese context to it, it could kind of be told from different perspectives. They're all characters who aren't defined by their race. And yet, if you look back at the history of the Oscar nominations and winners, you tend to see a certain trend. Lupita Nyong'o has been nominated, and indeed has won an Oscar, for playing a slave in 12 Years a Slave. Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer were nominated for playing maids in The Help. Denzel Washington has been nominated for playing a black Civil War soldier in Glory. He also won for playing a very specific drug-induced black police officer in Training Day. And of course, even if you go all the way back, first ever person of colour to win an Oscar was Hattie McDaniel in 1939, where she was the happy maid in Gone with the Wind. And there seems to be this perception that people of colour only tend to get recognised when they play palatable roles. And they play roles that rely on their race to fit a certain stereotype or niche. Same thing with Cynthia Erivo for Harriet Tubman. Of course, it's not a biographical film. You wouldn't expect a non-black person to play Harriet Tubman, but it's a very specific racial character, and particularly the way in which it was created and the controversy around it. That I've noticed it, and it worries me, but I'm wondering whether this is something that is, again, down to general structural problems, or whether the Oscars tend to have a problem. My personal opinion I will share later, but I'm wondering whether either of you have a say on this.
Well, I was reading something the other day that said that in terms of professions that win the most Oscars, number one is royalty, number two is sex worker. So it's, I think there is definitely, there's a type of Oscar bait sort of film that relies around either big historical people doing big historical stuff or focusing on people who have to deal with a great amount of suffering. And absolutely, I think people of colour are sort of, because there aren't as many, big historical figures of colour, in order to be recognised by the Oscar under this sort of Oscar bait thing, they are forced into the sort of the more oppressed category. But also, I think it's worth noting that of the male actor nominees this year, four out of the five were in professions around show business. So Adam Driver for Marriage Story, I think he's the director. Leonardo DiCaprio is in Hollywood. Antonio Banderas is, I think, also a director. I forget the other two.
As their characters.
As their characters, right. Yes. So there's definitely something around Hollywood sort of favouring itself, especially, you know, if it's people from the Academy. They're going to be LA-based, they're going to be in the industry. But there's definitely something to be said that there's almost a certain amount of voyeuristic pleasure out of watching people suffer.
Yeah, and like, also sometimes it feels a bit like, then people argue that they're like, oh, you're only nominating them because you feel bad, like, about the thing that they're portraying. Or sometimes it's like, oh, well, it was so brave of them to do this thing. Which, it can be equally brave to do lots of other parts that don't necessarily, like, tie into a specific racial history. But that definitely is the case. Also, I was just thinking, like, sort of side note about what you were saying about who was nominated. And I thought it was really interesting that Jennifer Lopez is nominated, well, wasn't nominated and was snubbed, versus Matthew McConaughey, who they've both come from a background of like slightly more like, you know, rom-com, chick flick type films, and yet Matthew McConaughey is quite easily zipped in there, but Jennifer Lopez has struggled. So that's kind of, I don't know if there's a correlation, but that's quite interesting as well.
I think a really excellent point was raised in a Guardian article by Beatrice Loaiza, which specifically talks about how, first of all, it points out that 14 women of color were among the 100 women who were nominated in the last decade, and only 9 out of the 100 from men in that same decade. And it's, again, the same kind of roles continue to be, you know, the magic ticket to the red carpet, as is said here. And something that also has been pointed out is how it almost feels like when the Academy does break out of its mold and kind of nominates and rewards interesting and groundbreaking films like Moonlight, which was the first ever film that had a completely black cast to win Best Picture. It was the first ever film that had an LGBTQ+-centric story to win Best Picture. It also won Screenplay, Best Supporting Actor. Incidentally, Best Supporting Actor was won by the first ever Muslim to win an acting category, Mahershala Ali. They point out that it almost feels like when the Oscars does that, they kind of pat themselves on the back and go, well, we've done this now.
Yeah, yeah.
And then obviously 2 years later, or I think it might have been 3 years later, they rewarded Green Book, which was a white savior fantasy. And kind of a bit like, that seems to be another problem that the Academy seems to have, is once they've achieved something superficial, not to say that Moonlight's win was superficial, it was extraordinary, but once they've achieved something, they seem to go, right, box has been ticked, let's move on. And I feel like that's an issue that they've had even with representation this year. They've kind of gone, oh, look, we've increased the representation in the Academies, we don't have to worry about it. Big example of this is to do with their best international feature film. Used to be called the best foreign language film, bracket, best film not in the English language. They've decided that from this year onwards, they're going to call it the best international feature film to highlight the fact that they are nominating films that are not made in the USA. But despite that, they decided that the Nigerian film Lionheart wouldn't even be considered eligible for the award because it's in English, which is Nigeria's official language and primary language. It's kind of a bit like you're doing the superficial change of not focusing on language, but then you're not following up the actual hard work to implement the change that needs to go behind that. And that's worrying.
I don't really have anything to add to that, apart from just like, yeah, that's not a good idea. Also, like, surely that opens it up to like any English film, like, and there's a lot of English films that could be included if you technically are talking about international. Categorisation there, I think, that needs a bit of work, definitely.
I mean, I've seen someone describe it as sort of colonialism in action, really. It's you go to a place, you force your language on them, and then when they come back with the language and say, please consider this film, just going, no. It's definitely a weird one, where people, you know, it's enough to be considered foreign, but not enough to be considered...
Yeah.
Incidentally, a similar point has been raised about the lack of interest in The Farewell, the Chinese language film that kind of got snubbed across the board. And obviously this needs to be taken with a pinch of salt because actual Academy voters haven't said this. But there was a bit of a backlash around The Farewell in the US because apparently it seems to romanticize a cultural cultural context in China where elderly people who are suffering from diseases aren't told what's going on with them because it might be harmful for their mental health. And there's you know, it's much more complex and nuanced than that, but that's where the criticism comes from. And yet films that glorify toxic masculinity don't seem to be a problem as long as they're directed into star white men. So it's kind of that whole, what are you applying standards when it only comes to quote unquote the other? You know, that's a whole, you know, that's another conversation that needs to happen.
Yeah, I think definitely. And I was also thinking about, to do a little side bit, how is it like a first past the post type nomination system?
It is a first past the post nomination system, apart from Best Picture, which is a preferential vote system. I should also point out, by the way, that Best Picture, the way it works is it needs to be a minimum of 5 nominees, a maximum of 10, and nominees need to have a certain percentage to get on the list. There are 9 nominations this year, so it kind of really highlights the fact that maybe you could have added another nominee. I know that sounds tokenizing, but it's kind of this fact that if you are considering recognition of films as an important factor, and you've acknowledged that that's something that the Academy doesn't do well, do something about that.
Yeah, I ask because it reminds me also of a similar sort of topic that came up at the Hugo Awards, so Science Fiction and Fantasy Literature Awards. I think last year basically got hijacked by some like men's rights activists who sort of pooled their resources and just told all of their like 4chan members to vote for the same thing. However, despite that, one of the categories still had a like basically reopen nominations win, like as in no award, because no one wanted to vote for the one that they put forward. So it's interesting like how the system, the voting system in place can also affect this. So you were saying like you have to campaign and kind of and, like get people to try and vote for you and things like that can kind of affect it as well. So maybe some of that behind the scenes might be a bit tricky to track.
As you brought up about the whole campaign thing, there is a big for your consideration campaign, and those can often cost in the millions. And so it doesn't surprise me that, for example, Joker, which is, I think, possibly the most profitable film of all time in terms of percentage of money spent versus percentage of money earned, you know, it's got a lot of money to spend. It may well have just sent out a lot of for your consideration campaigns, whereas I don't know how well, for example, Hustlers or The Farewell did. I can't remember if they were shown in the Savoy, for example. Because there are an awful lot of theatres that are only capable of showing either the biggest films in order to just get their revenue back if they're selling their tickets low, or, for example, with the whole Disney thing where they're saying, oh, you have to show Dumbo or else we won't let you show the new Star Wars, so you'll lose a lot of money there. So, I don't know. And I think almost by definition, the sort of films that focus on people of colour almost have a much smaller base on that thing, which is a problem. And until there's a whole big, you know, stuff like Black Panther is great, and there needs to be more of that, just in order to sort of, I don't want to say justify it, because obviously it's justified in and of itself, but popularise it, make it more of an accepted thing that can still be a big blockbuster thing on its own merits without having to justify it.
I think these are really important conversations need to carry on. But I do think, again, the reason I particularly want to bring it up this year, as we mentioned at the top of the half hour, is that the industry seems to be responding. There seems to be more of a positive reaction to having more women in the director's chair, finally. And, you know, one of the amazing responses to that has been the fact that every single one of the best documentary films this year has at least one female director. Some of them are co-directed, but every single one of them. So clearly there is a response in the industry, and it's headed in the right direction. As consumers of films, I think we have shown that there's a good response to that as well. Within this own show, we've got a bit of a variety when it comes to gender and race. It's tiny, tiny representation that it is, but, you know, we've kind of talked about that. So here's hoping that awards shows, which are probably inconsequential in many ways, but do have an impact on which types of films get funding and which types of films get recognition in the industry. So there is that impact to remember. Hopefully they'll listen to what we're trying to say.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to end on, definitely. So, yeah, hopefully going forward it's going to improve, but I think, you know, we can always, our small voice of asking for more cool stuff will always help. With that, we're coming to the end of our time, so thank you everyone for listening to Nerd of Mouth. If you want to find us on social media, we are Nerd of Mouth URN on Twitter and Instagram, and we will be with you the same time next week.